how can I look to my partner and to our relationship every single day and be grateful and to acknowledge and to appreciate at least two things in each other every single day? Because couples who do that, we call it positive sentiment override. It starts to snowball. They start to see more good, more good, more good. Mm-hmm. The couples that don't do that, they just hone in on and only see the negative. You'll find whatever you're seeking. You'll find the idiosyncrasies and all the things your partner does wrong. But if you look for what's going right, mm-hmm. you're going to be so much happier. I mean, 94-95% of couples who just appreciate each other basically have a happy future.
We believe that you are strong by design, and you were made in God's image to have a strong body, mind, and spirit. You're listening to the number one Strength and Health Authority podcast in the world. So let's get ready to unlock your potential and transform your life in today's episode.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode here on the Strong by Design podcast, co-hosting with my man, my neighbor here at Critical Bench, Mr. Jared Haley. Hi, Jared.
What's up?
Looking good, man, by the way. I'm the one with the hat, and you went no hat, nice hair today.
But I wore the sweatshirt.
I have messy hat hit.
I was very intentional about that.
Yeah. I got my Savannah Bananas hat. If anyone's a baseball fan listening, Savannah Bananas are like the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball. Mm-hmm. And I just saw them live for the first time with my son, and they were absolutely phenomenal. Like, it's one of the better live events I've ever been to in my life. So we have a very heart-filled, I think I'm going to do a lot of learning today about how I can improve my marriage with our special guests, Robert and Charlotte Snow. Before we introduce our very special guests, I just want to say thank you to our listeners, maybe some new listeners who have just landed on this episode because they saw the word master your marriage in the episode title, and that got them very curious and interested. Welcome to Strong by Design. If you're new, if you're a past listener, then you know what to expect. We're going to go deep on this topic, as deep as we can inside of an hour, and really uncover some things. I'm sure Jared and I will add a little bit of value, but we're really going to leave it open to Robert and Sharla to shine and share their wisdom with us. God knows I need it. thank you again for finding the show. Please hit 5 stars or leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. That means a lot to us. So our special guests, Robert and Charlotte Snow, married for over 30 years, have 4 children. So they probably know a thing or two about a lasting, loving marriage. I got a snippet from their podcast, which is by the same name. And I wanted to just actually share it because I thought that this was really enlightening. It says that the average couple waits 6 years to get help in their marriage. And that's 6 years, obviously, of pain and of hurt, frustration, and lost opportunity to improve their marriage. And so they, being married for over 30 years, have a lot of value to share with us and offer some guidance to fill people's marriage with fun and friendship and love without it feeling like hard work. And I thought that those were very simple terms that most people can resonate with and would love to have in their marriages. So Robert and Charlotte, thank you so much for being on Strong by Design.
Thanks for the intro and thanks for having us. We're excited to spend the hour with you.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. We could talk about Savannah Bananas too. I love watching their online stuff.
They were absolutely a thrill. My son is 12. I've been coaching him in baseball for many, many years. And we just, baseball to us is a very special game for many reasons. And the Bananas are highly skilled players. I mean, these are up and coming players, young men who are probably looking still for their shot in the bigs or playing in the minor league system. I mean, these guys are skilled, not just in baseball though. They're skilled in being around people, in making kids' dreams come true with autographs and jumping into the stands to celebrate with the fans and really adding a layer of entertainment to a game that's for some people, a little slow, but not a Savannah Bananas game. And so just so much fun. I mean, we just so enjoyed our time. So anyway, that's
we were big ball player parents as well. Spent many, many years and had countless hours at ball fields. So I love that. I love that.
Yeah, I remember you saying that. Yeah, I'm living those memories that you hold dear. I'm living it right now and loving it.
I'm a little jealous.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Well, you have to follow me, my very small social channel, my Instagram and Facebook, because I do share a lot of baseball event stuff.
We'll
there.
We'll do it. We'll live vicariously.
Yeah, exactly. So, so obviously we want to know, we just came to know you folks recently through a mutual friend of ours, Lewis, who is a dear friend of ours on the show, helped this podcast get started. And he reached out a few months back and said, hey, you need to know these people. And I think they'd be great guests. And obviously after talking with you, that was, absolutely. Let's get them on the show right away. Cause I know I need help in my marriage. And if you're married and don't feel that way, then I don't know, maybe you're looking past some things, because I think we all need some help on some on some level.
We all need help. Yeah,
we all need help. Right, Jared? Yeah.
No, I'm good.
Yeah. Oh, you're all set.
Jared's good. Jared's good. Yeah,
well, we'll just hang up now. Jared can take over.
No, I'm teasing. No, it's always a constant learn. Even the stuff that you know, revisiting those things and putting those things into practice it's one thing to know something, right? It's another thing to actually know what to do with that knowledge. So I'm excited. I mean, we were just talking just briefly before we even hit the record button, and just excited to hear what you guys are doing, what you're up to, how you got to where you are. And I'm excited for our listeners to be able to hear as well, as we want healthy marriages. And that's just something that you don't see as much these days. And so it's something that takes work. But at the same time, I feel like we should get to that place where, yes, we're still learning and we're growing, but man, we really love to be married, and it's no longer, you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It is a life work. It's not like I just figured the skill out and we're good. Now we're fine. Mm-hmm. To me, it's the metaphor of the Bible and the refiner's fire. You know, marriage to us is the refinement process of how we become better people, because our spouse is that mirror. They mirror back to us all of our immaturities, all those areas where we still need to grow up. And just like melting down gold or silver and the dross, the impurities rise up to the surface in our marriage, all of our junk rises to the surface, and we can learn from that. We can scrape it away and we can be molded into something better, or we cannot. And I just think that honestly, marriage is this divine institution for all of us to become better people if we allow it to do so, if we allow it to help us to refine those parts of us that are still rough.
Yeah, that's well said. Iron sharpens iron in friendship and in marriage, right? So how did you two meet? Come on, a little storytelling, a little sharing.
Oh, geez.
What did Robert do to impress you and get your heart?
Okay, yeah, he should tell this. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So we met at it was a Christmas dance, and there was a sort of a church fraternity, and Charlotte comes in, and she was actually on the wrong time zone, so she was an hour early with one of her friends. And I promised her that she'd have a good time if she came back. They went to go get...
He was working tickets at the door.
Yeah,
so he was checking out all the girls that came through.
Yeah. I mean, I have no idea why the rest of the guys didn't want to work the door. I just took the door shift because, hey, I got to hold everybody's hand on the way in, give them a stamp, right? It was a great deal. So I saw her, and I will say that sucked, because I sort of fell for her and I didn't want to fall for anybody. And we spent that day. So we dated for nine months.
We dated for about 8 months, and he proposed, and then 4 months later. So it was almost just a little over a year from the time we met, and I was 19.
Yeah. She was 19.
Oh my goodness.
I should tell you a story about how she lied to me, but maybe that's not much.
Maybe
she
later.
Didn't lie to me, but
about her age.
Yeah. 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 So I was 23, 24, 23, 24. And so I was, you know, you don't want to ask their age. You just sort of want to gauge it, because you got some game. Right. And so like, I was like, so tell me, like, you're going to school. Like, where are you? Cause I'm just sort of finishing my sophomore year. So I'm doing the math. I'm like 19.
I went to college and high school.
Yeah. That would be good. Right. No, the girl, she's the overachiever here. Already had most of her associate's degree done before she graduated high school. So
I didn't lie.
Gotcha.
So she was 18 and something when we met.
Yeah. Yeah.
But by the time she won me over and I fell head over heels in love with this one,
it's too late.
It was too late. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
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 Wow. Set the hook.
Yeah. Set the hook. Yeah. She set the hook. That was good.
So how many in between you two?
We're 7 years apart.
Yeah. 7 years apart.
7 years apart.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We're married 32 years now. Yeah. We just celebrated our 32nd year together. And our story of how we met really isn't all that particularly interesting. But I think what is interesting is how hard it was for us in the first few years of our marriage. And, you know, Robert's mom had been married 4 times. My parents were divorced when I was 10, 11. So as far as modeling goes, we had the worst of the worst. And there's an interesting statistic. The statistics vary a little bit, but there's a couple of researchers that found that if a woman's parents are divorced, the odds of her as an adult becoming divorced are about increased by 69%. They're increased by 69%. Whereas if both the husband and the wife's parents are divorced, the risk of divorce increases by 189%.
Oh my gosh.
And we didn't know that going into things. But
yeah, nobody would have told us that.
We very quickly realized the truth of the matter, which is that if you don't have some skills and you have a lot of baggage coming into your relationship, you're going to repeat the patterns and the communication skills that you saw growing up.
Even if you don't want a relationship like your parents, right? Most people go into that. It's like, oh, I'm not going to have a marriage anything like my parents, or I want one just like my parents, right? If you don't learn how to disagree and how to watch your parents model love and kindness, if the only thing you learned, as me, was screaming, fighting, or running out, right? Then the first disagreement that we have, like, I'm going to default to that behavior. And I did, right? So mine was yelling, slamming things, temper tantrums. It's all I ever saw in any of the 4 relationships my mom had.
And in my parents' relationship, my mom was pretty rough on my dad. There was a lot of criticism. There was a lot of contempt, a lot of talking down to him, a lot of belittling him to get him to be in line and to kind of control. And so, you know, I just thought that's the way you get your husband to do the dishes. I didn't know that was, you know, extremely destructive to the relationship.
Wait, it's not?
No. I mean, it can work, but but there's some negative side effects to that.
Like divorce.
Yeah. Like divorce. So the problem being, like, she would control and, you know, criticize and use contempt to get me to do something. And then I would get frustrated and then I would just get angry and yell. Right. And so now we're like, neither one sounds like it's a great combination for how to solve a problem and communicate in a relationship. Right. Yet we were both doing both of those. So we like to call this first phase of our marriage the newlywed years, and even up to having kids, the you're never going to make it phase, because the odds at 198% definitely didn't show in our favor. And had we been married in the past 5 years, like recent times now, we probably wouldn't have, because relationships are a lot more disposable now than they used to be.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's a sad word combination to have there. Disposable marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It doesn't, it's like they're really opposites. The word marriage really is, you know, two becoming one, and it's a lifelong commitment. And it's really frightening what that looks like in modern day, in the last decade or last couple decades.
I feel like that's like one of the foundations to the core of almost like the demoralization of at least in our country and in our culture is really that breakdown of the home, right? The breakdown of marriage and saying it's not important, the true statements or whatever statement you want to throw out there as far as, you know, do whatever you want to do and whatever feels right. Mm-hmm. The problem is, I wrote this down yesterday, feelings do not equal truth, you know?
That's right.
Yet that's what is preached to us everywhere, is whatever feels right, you know, do it. And that's just, it's so destructive that way. And because of that, we are in a society now that, families aren't as important and marriages aren't as important, and they're only good until you don't like it anymore. And then you find something new.
Well, I think we have a very low tolerance for discomfort in general, and marriage is uncomfortable. It's designed to make you uncomfortable, because nobody's going to change until they get uncomfortable. If it wasn't for that discomfort, I would still be telling him he was a worthless piece of whatever. And I would still be behaving in that way, right? We have to get uncomfortable in order to get that motivation sometimes to look in the mirror and to change.
Marriage is this amazing masterclass in growing up personally.
Yeah.
It grows you as a person. If you'll let it grow you, it will grow you up into the person that you could be and should be and maybe can be for your kids. And so, you know, Jared, I was thinking about that, the you do you, right? That isn't, yeah. You know, that it feels right. And part of our goal and part of our mission really is can we kind of cut down this number of single parents? Single parent households are a really bad statistic in general. Kids raised in single parent households have a higher likelihood of drug abuse, higher likelihood of early sex and early pregnancy, higher likelihood of jail time, less likely to graduate high school. So this, the needing the two parents in the home is so super important. And, there's another quote by a gal and I wish I remember what it was, but she just said, you know, we're not really designed to do this. You know, if the husband can fulfill a role where he supports and uplifts and strengthens the mom, then the mom can give all of her energy, all of her feminine energy into raising and nurturing the children. But if the mom has to do both, then she has to separate away some of that feminine nurturing energy and then take on both those roles. And thus the children in the end are really the ones who suffer in that situation because mom lacks the support necessary to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. I heard a quote, I don't remember who said it, but had something along the lines of, we didn't realize when we were growing up, we were actually watching our parents grow up.
Mm. Absolutely.
I thought, you know, so we have four kids. I know you guys have four kids. Our oldest is 12 and, we feel that, you know, we feel that every day. Like we've learned a lot, but we're still figuring out how to sort out those things and how those live out practically on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. And so, it's funny to think about how old I am now and thinking about like when I was our son's age, like my parents were old. I thought they were old and they had things figured out and to go back in time and think they were probably still figuring stuff out as well.
Absolutely. You know? We're figuring it out.
Yeah, and the ability to be able to be humble that way. I've talked to my kids, even my 29-year-old, who's our oldest now. I'm like, dude, I'm still figuring it out. Like, I hope you didn't come to me thinking I had this thing wired. Like, and I apologize for the way that all the times that I was an idiot when I raised you. Cause I'm, you know, and, you know, double down, I didn't really have a father influence, right? So I would often tell him, I'm just trying to figure out how to be a father. I just want to love you. I want to love you unconditionally as much as I can, because maybe that's the thing that was lacking in my life. But yeah, it's, you know, if you'll let marriage grow you up and help let you grow each other up. And, you know, there's a great quote. It's really a leadership quote, but I think it works well in marriage as well. The difference between a great partner in a relationship and a good partner is the great partner realizes that he still has more to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's for me, that's like one of my number one self-development goals is just humility. In the professional life, in my personal life, and it's just such a powerful tool to let others know that, you know, you're vulnerable and you don't have it all figured out, and that you're a good listener. I've tried to develop my listening skills more as I've gotten older. I have a long way to go at home and here in the office, but it's all about the willingness to work and to put in the work. And the two of you, with your platform, have talked a lot about the value in identifying the strengths and the weaknesses in your relationship. Mm-hmm. And will you talk a little bit more on that? I would imagine that can be, as you said, Charles, right before we started recording, a past client of yours that was irritated with you, angry with you for things that you had let her know that she didn't want to hear, but then she got that feedback from someone else she trusted and was like, oh, it's like, sometimes you got to be willing to hear
hard things,
the hard stuff and know that you don't have it all figured out and you got some weak spots that need some work.
Absolutely. So we start every coaching client with an assessment, and it comes from the Gottman Institute. It's a relationship checkup, and it assesses certain areas of the relationship. And all I'm really doing is going through that and looking at where are the strengths that we can build on, and then where are the weaknesses or the challenge areas that we can improve on. And of course, if we're going to get to a certain goal, we have to be able to know where we are right now in relationship to that goal, right? And so all of this, what this assessment is really looking at, and this is the cool thing, is that relationships, the success or the failure of any relationship is highly predictable. Like, there's so much data and so much research now on what it takes to have a successful relationship that it's really nonsense to not actually dig in and figure out what these skills are that we can develop. It's not a flip of a coin. People think, first marriages, 45% of them in a divorce, and second marriages or whatever, 60, whatever. And we're up to like 75% or something on third marriages. It's just a freak chance if we make it. It's not a freak chance. Like, there are clear indicators of there's certain things we need to have in a relationship. We need to have friendship. We need to be able to manage conflict in a constructive and positive way. And we need to be able to have some sort of way of working together, of building a life together where we're creating shared meaning. So we find out, what is it that's going to make your life more wonderful, my life more wonderful? How do we align these things and help each other and support each other so that we're helping each other to achieve those things? That's really all it is. And then we have specific, tests that we can run. But if they're the biggest reason why marriages fail is because they don't know how to do conflict. So I have all these different markers of how they're doing conflict and whether certain aspects are present in their conflict. And then we look at their friendship and whether they're building rituals, whether there's appreciation in the relationship, whether they know each other well. And then we can go, okay, here's where you are. Here's where you want to be. Here's the path to get there. You can choose in or you cannot. But it's not a flip of a coin. It's not, 50% of marriages in divorce. Oh, whoops. I guess we got the heads instead of the tails.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like this idea of, well, we weren't meant for each other, or, mm-hmm. or we fell out of love, or whatever it might be,
right.
Which is another problem. I mean, is that we get our definition of love from our culture instead of what is biblically true, mm-hmm. and understanding what love actually is.
And it's not a feeling.
What's that? Yes, it's more than a feeling. Absolutely.
More than a feeling. There's a song. I knew it.
I was just looking at your topics on your YouTube channel with your recent episodes, and you have one that says creating a marriage vision statement, which you just kind of alluded to that a little bit as far as helping each other and having goals and things for a future. Can you just give me, I don't know if Chris sent you that question or not, but yeah. I'm just looking at my own question.
We can go in whatever direction.
Yeah, that's the best part about these.
I'm curious. I mean, I feel like that there's a lot of value there. I'm all about practical application and tools. Yeah. And I think that this is a practical thing that any couple that is listening to this, I mean, if you're talking about a shared future, what does that look like? What does it look like for you to have a shared future? And what does it look like to put together a marriage vision statement?
That happens to be Robert's favorite subject.
Yeah, it might be. But think about it from a business perspective. I mean, you wouldn't try to run a business without setting goals. You wouldn't, and what is the first thing they always tell us, like building a business, we want our vision statement and our mission statement and all these types of things, right? And then every time you have a decision to make, you hold that decision up against your vision and mission statement. It's, does this match our vision? Does this match our mission? Right. So, and successful companies do this all day long. And I know we get some grief online about this, like, oh, well, it's not a business. If it's another business meeting, I'm out. Like, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about sitting down and saying, how do you want to raise your children? What do we want to focus on this year? Do we feel like they need more spirituality in their lives? Do we feel like they need more or less sports in their lives? Do we feel like maybe we need more of a presence with me being dad, right? Do my children need more dad in their lives this year moving forward, right? Do they need more mom? Do we feel like we're not being nurtured? Is one of them maybe have some sort of an overriding concern? Like maybe one of your children has some depression or anxiety issues, and we're going to need to shift the vision statement for our marriage to support one aspect or the other, right? And then, and by doing this, when both of you are there and you craft this vision statement, and then aligned values, which is another topic, but when we craft the vision statement about how we want things to go in our relationship, it becomes much easier. The rest of the decisions are almost made. much the way they use that example for business, right? We'll hold up this decision like, hey, we want to go to Cabo and we're going to leave child number two at home. Well, child number two has anxiety and depression, and that doesn't meet our mission and vision statement for bringing everybody together and creating a supporting environment. So maybe Cabo decision is off the table
for next year.
For next year, yeah. Right? Does that make sense? So you're starting to apply each of those things. And do we want to be more spiritual? Do we want to be more physical? Right? Like, what is the vision? Happy, healthy, strong. Like, okay, that would be a great vision statement for our relationship. What does that mean? Well, that means that we're going to then create some goals and some values around that. So we want to be happy, healthy, and strong. How can we be more healthy? Well, we're going to try eating better. We're going to get up at 6:30 and work out. Like, so everything filters down from this creating this vision statement. And when you do, the only thing you're doing is you're spending on opportunity, crafting what your world looks like together with your partner, which is the thing you did when you first got together and you left that. If we haven't revisited that, we have a 32-year-old vision statement. And what's our 32-year-old vision statement sound like when we're first married?
Nothing like
I think
today.
We want to get naked more, because now we can, we got married, right? I mean, what is it when you're like, and we want to go to the movies and I like popcorn, right? And that's great. And like, we want to do an adventure together. Like, now that you have kids, things change. So that's why revisiting your values, revisiting your vision statement annually is so important, because things change. Your relationships change.
We are huge proponents of rituals. We call them rituals. We call them that instead of habits, just because to us, they're things that are in our relationship that are incredibly sacred that other things don't get to take priority over. And we create rituals around our values set. And so every year, what we do is we go on first week of January, every year. This is a non-negotiable. It's our favorite thing to do. It's not like it's a job. It's actually something we love to do. And we get away up in the mountains. We stay in a cabin. We stay in a resort. We stay somewhere where we're snowed in, no kids, no distractions, no phones. And we spend the weekend talking about our future. We sit down and the most important question we ask each other this whole weekend, for the first part of it's like, let's celebrate last year and let's talk about our wins from last year and let's feel, you know, really good. And let's talk about some of the things we learned from last year. But then we shift into what's important to us now. What's important to us in the context of, and then there's a blank line. And we have in that blank line, we can put our marriage or our family or our children, the things that really matter. And then we make a list. What's important to us in the context? Let's say it's our relationship. What's important to us in the context of our relationship? What else? What else? What else? What else? And we make a list of about 50 things. And then I look at his list and he looks at my list and we compare our lists and we go, okay, now rank these things. What's most important to us? If we were to rank these in the top 10 for each of us, what are they? And then we look at our two lists of top 10 things and go, okay, now how do we build a life around these values that are so important to us? Because values is what drives us. That's what motivates us. That's what gets us up in the morning. And that's how we judge our effort in life and whether we're doing a good job or we're not, and we're on track or we're not. And so how can we now build rituals around these values? And when we do that and we plot those things and we create a course of, you know, a course, and we put these things onto our calendar, our marriage is so rock solid, as long as we're not destroying it with terrible conflict. Like, our marriage is so rock solid because our values are aligned and our mission is aligned. And now we have rituals that are the daily touch points for these big picture ideas that we've created.
Yeah. I like that because it takes the assumptions out of things. I think a lot of times in our marriages, we assume that we're moving in the same direction, but you don't ever verbalize it. And so then you're all over the place. Yeah. But I love that you guys do that, because now you have this thing to go back to. So every decision that you're making after that throughout the year, you can look back and say, hey, does this align what we've already agreed to?
That's right.
And then you can kind of hold, you can hold, like, I can tell you from experience that holding my wife accountable doesn't always go super smooth unless we've agreed on it beforehand, right? Like, otherwise it's just, you know, me telling her what to do or her telling me what to do. And that just causes more conflict. But if we can bring it up and say, hey, is this really fitting into the value system that we set up? Then it's almost approaching it as we're approaching this problem like hand in hand together, as opposed to feeling like we're always, you know, bumping heads against each
exactly.
other.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And you know, specifically to that hand in hand thing, if we agree, so I'll give you real life examples. We decided to launch the podcast at our values
2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Right. And mm-hmm. so when the hard work comes in, because you guys know that, right? Podcasting is not an easy thing. It's not just hold your phone up and then tell the world, right? You got to plan it out. When the hard work comes in, it's okay. And none of us, neither one of us are arguing about it. It's like the time to go record. Great. We do this on Tuesdays. Why? This is something that we decided had value to us. This is something that we decided was a goal in our relationship. We agreed on that. We felt that it was important to strongly support each other. And now there's not even a conversation. It's like, yep, we're going to go. We're going to do that. And the same thing with 6:15 a.m. We get up and work out together for 20, 30 minutes. Why? Because that's something we agreed that we thought was important for us to do. So we just get up and do it. Like drag my rear end down there, wake up while I'm on the Peloton bike. Like,
and these things that he's talking about, these specific actions, they came from a value. Like there was a value that was driving these behaviors. So of course, for the podcast, it was like, how do we reach and support and help more people in their relationships? How do we, because our belief is that when we create stronger relationships, we have stronger families, we have stronger children, we have stronger communities, stronger churches, and it just extends out from there. Like everything in our life becomes a manifestation of what's going on in our relationship. So how can we help more people to have more success? And so that came from a value of wanting to serve and show up and help others. That was the value. The podcast idea was like, that's how we're going to do it. That's the specific tactic of how we're going to achieve that specific value or goal that we have.
So how do you guys approach it when you do have a disagreement of a value or a disagreement on how you're going to tackle that value? And I mean, we know like budget is a number one killer of marriages, and how you're raising your kids is a number one, is I think number two. And so let's say you've structured this value system, and then it's April and all of a sudden you're having a disagreement about how to fulfill that value. How do you guys approach that?
So talk about the 69% real quick.
Yeah, I was going to say, so the good news is, and we're going to give you the good news, we're always going to disagree on stuff. I mean, it just doesn't matter. And we're going to share some research with you from John Gottman. But in the research that Gottman has done since the 70s, he's the number one marriage researcher out there. He found that 69% of the problems in relationships are recurring problems. They don't go away. You're not going to solve them.
Even in the most successful relationships.
Yeah. Gives people a little bit of breathing room, because you realize like, oh, wait, you mean I don't have to solve every single problem that I'm having? What you have to do is
either that or it's depressing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's good because some of these problems can become entrenched and gridlocked, and that's a whole separate issue. But, oftentimes we just stop talking about them, right? Now we don't have anything to talk about, and then we're mad, and then it comes up again and we're blowing up and having that. And one of our 69% is actually on how we raise our youngest.
Some parenting things because we were raised differently. And we're always going to be two different people. Even though marriage is about becoming one, we have different backgrounds. We have different ways that we were raised, and certain things of his value, certain values that he has might be a little different than certain values that I have when it comes to parenting specifically. And so they're going to clash against each other. And the thing is, knowing that it is 69%. That we're going to hear this subject again. We're going to talk about this probably next year and maybe next month. It sort of lightens the mood a little bit. Like, we don't have to actually fully solve this. We can just learn to dialogue about it. We can learn to manage it. And maybe we can even throw in some humor and some more positivity. Maybe we can just start to laugh about it. Like, oh, that old problem. Oh my gosh, we're talking about that again, and just laugh it off. Because if you can add humor to conflict, well, that just injects all this positivity. And that's really what we want to see, is we want to see conflict become more positive. The people and the couples in the research that stayed married happily long term, that's one of the significant differences between them and the couples that got divorced was positivity and conflict. So they had on average a 5-to-1 ratio of positivity to negativity during conflict, versus the ones that got divorced had more negativity, like 0.8-to-1. So more negativity than positivity. So if you realize, okay, we're going to have disagreements, actually, maybe I could change my mindset about disagreements. Maybe I could start to see conflict instead of a problem. Maybe I can see it as actually a good thing. See, Americans are super conflict avoidant. We think that if there's a conflict, we should avoid it at all costs. But the reality is that's the refinement process. When we have a conflict, that forces us together to figure out a way to negotiate, to compromise, to understand each other more, to love more,
have compassion,
to be more compassionate, to be more understanding. And that's the refinement process right there. So if I can see conflict as having a positive purpose and it's going to keep circling around again and it makes us better in the process, then welcome it instead of avoiding it.
Yeah. Whenever I'm in scripture and I'm reading about how to become a better man, it is that refinement process and God just giving you opportunity after opportunity after opportunity. Yes. In your marriage, in your relationships, to improve and to grow. As you said earlier, you know, when we're stretched and we're in that position to change a little bit, we might not love it certainly at the start, but we have to at least hopefully we recognize it, those moments a little bit better as we get older, and there's an awareness there. And I feel like that's experiential, that's wisdom that's settling in, and that you don't have in your 20s certainly, and most people don't have at a high degree in their 30s. And I think it starts to hit a little bit more in the 40s. I feel like I'm coming into my own here as I get into my later 40s and seeing those opportunities for what they are. And, I know, and realizing that we're on the same side, you know, I feel like sometimes in conflict, it's like, we're in this marriage together, man. We're on the same team. We're not adversaries. We're not opponents. We're together, and we want the same things. We just sometimes have different ideas how to get there, and that's okay. I have so much room to grow there.
We all do, and we like to say how you do conflict is how your marriage goes, right? And you see those people that are just so zen, and I wish that I was zen, and I'm not, because I'm still learning. But thinking about how we address those issues, especially those to tackle those hard issues, Jared, like you mentioned, right? Coming in hot. So how the conversation starts is 99, we'll just call it 100% the way it ends. You come in hot because you're a little bit mad. The conversation's going to end hot and it's never going to be good, right? So we talk about soft startup, like how to just take a beat. And even if you do come in hot, like maybe one of our favorite little, tips that we like to give to couples is learn how to apologize and repair often, right? That was also found in the research. The couples that repaired often usually by telling a joke or something. So if I come in, I'm like, friggin', I just ran over the bike in the garage again. Like, could he put the bike away? Like, are you serious with like right now? And Charlotte will say,
that was a little sharp, honey.
That was a little sharp.
Can we try again?
Like, okay, yeah. You know what? I'm sorry. I came in a little hot. Let me, I apologize. I'm a little frustrated. I ran over the bike and I know I'm gonna have to buy a new one. Mm-hmm. Cause I wasn't really looking. And so like, I don't know if you noticed that, could maybe you help me reinforce with him that he should put his bike in the rack instead of right in front of the garage door. Will I run it over?
Yeah.
And so, I actually, any of you guys run over the bike in the garage? Cause I've done it at least twice.
I have not done that. We're not currently parking in the garage because it's like,
okay. So there is that.
It is bikes, balls, scooters, and workout equipment. And so it's like just a little bit too hairy. But I love that kind of like, hey, honey, you get a do-over.
Yeah.
Coming in hot. Give that another try. And then that's like a reset for you to kind of do it better. But she's giving you that opportunity, it sounds like.
There's certain characteristics, there's certain patterns that we can do in a conversation that are absolutely 100% of the time going to escalate the conversation, and it's going to destroy goodwill, and it's going to make your partner less likely to be interested in helping you to get your needs met. And I think we're all here to help each other get our needs met, help each other to have a more wonderful life. But if we do certain things, our partner is going to shut down and not be interested in helping us to have a better life, they're not going to be interested in our well-being anymore. And those things are criticism. So anytime we come in with a harsh criticism, anytime we use contempt, which we mentioned at the beginning was I had a gold medal in when we first got married.
Gold medalist, double gold medalist.
And contempt is really just thinking you're superior. So it's in your thinking. It starts in your thinking. It doesn't actually, it does come out of your words, but it oozes out of every part of you. It oozes out of your stare, your glare, your eye rolls, your body language.
The look.
Right. Yeah. And it's anytime you're talking down to your partner, thinking you're so much smarter, tidier, better, well-behaved, whatever, right? All the ways that you're just so down there. And that just, and it really does come off in, yes, it comes off with criticism too, but it comes off in body language. So much of what we communicate is beyond the words. So anytime we do criticism, contempt, anytime we start getting defensive, like, okay, he comes in with the bike story. Maybe I'm like, well, maybe you're just blind. You know, maybe you should try putting your glasses on. Like maybe you need to learn to drive again. You need to go back to school. Like, you know, I could come back with like harsh things back to him, or I have a choice in that moment to give him a do-over. Like, that was a little sharp. Could we start that over again? So if we can de-escalate early and often, it keeps these patterns from continuing to spiral. And then the fourth one is stonewalling. Stonewalling is also just shutting down. One of you is, it's usually men that do the stonewalling. It's usually women that do the criticizing, but, you know, shutting down and just not giving anything back at all. I've just become a stonewall. These are what they've found to be the most corrosive to relationships in the research, and contempt is number one. That is hands down the number one thing that has to be taken out of every relationship if it's going to make it. It's the number one predictor of divorce. It's, it also predicts illness. The more and more a person hears contempt, the sicker they usually are.
Can I just say, to circle back around to what you guys were talking about before, as far as the value system and agreeing on the value system, like coming in hot, being too sharp, all of those things work if it's agreed upon beforehand that that's like what we're going to be doing together. I think that if, you know, it could come across unhealthy if you're coming a little hot, you know, and you can almost be a contempt statement of you're coming a little hot or you're coming a little sharp. If you know, and you're, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's good for you guys. I feel like it's good as a couple, to say, hey, we want to have healthy conflict. What's an agreeable phrase or statement that we can say to somebody that when it happens, we know that I'm saying this in love so that we can reset.
That's a great point. And we encourage couples to have certain code words. Like, that was a little sharp. That's our code word. And maybe somebody else would hear that and think, well, that was a criticism, but that's our agreed upon code word. And we get couples to do that. Plus have, you know, signs when they need a break. You know, there's one of the other big predictors of divorce is when we get emotionally flooded, because when our heart rate gets over 100 beats a minute for the average person, everything shuts down. Our ability to be compassionate, gone. Our ability to hear each other, gone. Our ability to
take in new information,
gone. Yeah. So you have to have a code word for, okay, we take a break. Robert and I didn't take breaks back when we first got married.
No, well, the only thing I saw was lots of fighting when I grew up, right? And then I saw people leaving, and I wasn't going to give up on my marriage, so I stayed in the fight. What a bad idea that was, right? So I just stayed in it. Like, I'm not
hanging in there. Hang in there, Robert.
I'm hanging in there, right?
And fight with the best of them.
I'm hanging in, you know, with the fight. Just and you know what happens when we get flooded, and people are really actually terrible at noticing whether their heart rate's high or not. When we do retreats, we put pulse oximeters on everybody's finger and watch them talk about a concept, and they're like, oh. Yeah, there it is. Little pulse oximeter. We'll put on their finger, and I'm like, oh, who's over 100? And they're like, holy crap, I'm over 100. I have to take a break.
Interesting.
So taking your break and calming down was so funny. So who here has had an argument and then come back to it later and said, what the heck was that about? That was the dumbest argument we ever had, right? It's because now we're calm and now we're cooler. But if we're flooded, we can't take in new information. And there's a thing called auditory exclusion. We can't hear very well either, right? So we raise our voice and then we keep repeating ourselves because clearly they can't hear me. I'm trying to make my point. It's just like, that doesn't work, right? So we talk about in the conflict section, right? Like how to have conversations, how to have compassion, gentle startup, right? When it's important to take a break, and it's not important to just abandon it. Like, I can't talk to you anymore. That's different than, hey, I think we need to take a break, minimum of 30 minutes, right? We're not going to replay it in our head. We're just going to get our mind off of it. So then we come back, heart rate's down.
And we can be human again.
Yeah. We're actually, like I said, that now you can be human again instead of a complete idiot.
Yeah.
You can hear, you can take in new information. Yeah.
I mean, that's that's the your think brain. You know, they call it the wizard and lizard brain. You know,
yeah, absolutely,
exactly.
The two different types. And when your emotions take over, like that's it,
game over.
You're no longer thinking clearly. You just, and then it becomes about winning, right? And winning is not us successfully navigating this conflict together. Winning is I got to say my point wins. You know, and that's very unhealthy. I was laughing as you were talking because I was imagining like being in an argument and pulling out the pulse thing and putting like, I can just imagine how that would go.
Maybe you should just set it at 100 honey, beats. Everybody have an audible alarm, right? And you're having an argument and it goes beep, beep, beep. And you're like, oh, I'm out. Sorry.
Uh-oh. Break time.
So like a video game, you're like, oh, he died. Health out.
That's so funny. Oh man, that's so good. I like it.
I was just going to share, you know, we all come from those different backgrounds how our parents handled these conflicts. If we were lucky enough to have two parents in the home, obviously, but my parents divorced when I was 13 and my dad was a very strict, disciplinarian. He was abusive verbally and physically, and, you know, what he said, that's like my mom was like the force field protective bubble around me and my brothers, and never had really any conflict with my mom, like ever, because my dad provided so much for everybody that my mom was just like the safety mechanism for the kids, for us. And but my dad, I mean, there's no wonder in my life where I get my temper, my short fuse from, how I handle things. Like, it's all my dad. But thankfully, my mom was just a wonderful human being who was just such a sweet person, had a great role model in her father. And her love for her three boys and the bond that we had, my brothers and I and my mom, was so strong. That did help to shield us, I think, in some ways from my dad's harshness, even though, you know, I'm not making my dad out to be a monster, but he was a tough man to live with. And so I think it's an evaluation that a lot of people listening right now need to kind of maybe jot some things down on paper or give themselves some time to really think hard about, like, why am I the way I am? Why do I parent the way I parent? What did I grow up with? What was my mom like? What was my dad like? What am I doing that's good that I learned from them? What am I doing that's bad that I learned from them? And kind of develop this. I mean, do you talk about that much in your...
I think the vast majority of relationship issues, I would say upwards of 80, 90%, have mostly to do with how we were raised. We bring our baggage into our marriage, and we have to learn. So there's this quote I heard, if I can remember it, the adults and caretakers in our life wire these trigger buttons into us as a child growing up. And our adult responsibility when we grow up is to figure out how to unwire those trigger buttons. So I think it's a lifelong journey, but we get to figure out and ask those important questions that you just said and figure out what are those things that were what was the software that I was given? Because I can rewrite the software. I don't have to keep it. I can reinstall the new version of whatever on my super quantum computer that is me. I don't have to hold on to that old software that was given to me by my parents.
I think that's such a key point as well, because it's really easy for us to sometimes use our past as almost an excuse, right? Oh, well, I do it this way because, you know, and recognizing that there was no perfect home. Like, my parents didn't argue growing up, but that just means that now I grow up and I think if there is conflict that our marriage is in trouble because I never saw it. Right. You know, and that's the complete opposite of what Chris was just describing in his home, right? And so it's this thing where, there is no perfect home, and we all have to figure these things out, and we can't keep, you know, going back to, oh, well, you know, it's because when I grew up, da 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 da. You have to figure out those tools to rewire the software in order to be successful and to not keep using that. And that goes beyond marriages. I think that's just us as becoming self-aware and understanding how to grow as a human being, and to start growing up. The other piece that I'd love to hear from you guys a bit as well is, how are you incorporating your faith and your spirituality and bringing Jesus into the equation, as whether it's in the process of creating your value systems or what your plan is for the year or your vision statement, and how are you bringing God into that aspect of your marriage?
Personally or in the clients that we work with, or both?
With you guys.
With us personally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that really, it goes back to our annual retreat that we do by ourselves every year. And we sit down and we talk about what's important to us. When I said what's important to us in the context of blank, and we get to fill in that blank, we use multiple contexts of life. So we talk about, first, we go through our relationship. Then we go fill in the blank with family. Then we fill in the blank with spirituality. So that is where we sit down and we really look at what is important to us in terms of our spirituality. And we start to make a list. What's important to us? What else is important to us? What else is important to us? Okay, now let's line up our lists, and let's go ahead and come up with, again, some strategies and tactics for how. Does this mean that we're praying together more? Does this mean we're reading scripture together more? What does this really look like on a day-to-day basis? And how do we create these rituals around this? So I think it's looking at, and Robert, you can add to that, but like, I think it's taking each area of life and breaking it down and lining up our values and creating those, again, those rituals that are it's the code that we live by on a daily basis, and how we're showing up for each other and for those around us.
Yeah. And I think it's about tweaking your vision statement, right? Like, how does it start, right? We want a gospel-centered home where people will feel and know Christ-like love when they come in. Right. So if that's part of our vision statement, then those are the things that drive the decisions that we make. Like, what do we allow in the home? What types of things are here? What type of, you know, events are we going to hold? How are we going to show up for our kids? How are we going to provide service? Right. For me, service is a big, big thing. Like, we want to serve our community. We want to serve others, because that is the example, our ultimate example from the Savior. Right. What did he do? He just served. Right. And if I can just serve and give, and then, you know, bring some Christ-like love to the equation.
Yeah. So you can't go wrong with that, right? Yeah. Go ahead, Charla.
I just think if we can, the more we as couples sit down and have the conversation, instead of like, did you pay the water bill and did you take out the trash? If we can sit down and have deep conversations, intimate conversations, where we talk about life, these values, to us, I think the values work is probably the thing that's up-leveled our relationship more than anything else. When we discovered that, and we were on the same page, I mean, 99% of the time, we're like, we really don't even have that much conflict anymore, because we just live according to our values. And life changes everyone. Like, if you had asked us that question about bringing Jesus into our home, you know, 10 years ago, it would have been a completely different answer, because life changes us. It changes everyone. We've been through really hard things in the last 10 years, and it's shifted our perspective. It's shifted what's important to us. So that's why we have to keep reevaluating what is important, because hard times come, your priorities change.
Yeah, no doubt about that. You said something earlier too about knowing when to apologize. And it obviously goes back to being humble in your relationship. And once you've had time to process maybe an argument or a confrontation, and maybe overstepped, and, you know, an apology, when it's heartfelt, means something, and especially to your children. My dad, I don't recall when I was a kid, my dad really coming to me and apologizing for saying something harshly, or, you know, being abusive in some way. But I can't count. I need all my fingers on all my toes multiple times to count up how many times I've apologized to my kids in recent years when I've overreacted, said something I regretted, or, you know, it feels good. I think both for me, it's very healing, and for the children to know that, hey, you know, daddy's not perfect, and I make mistakes too. And, you know, I'm not too good for it. I think it just makes your kids appreciate you and know that you're fallible, and And it's an important lesson for them to learn, but then it's also really important for your spouse to see that as well. And I don't know. I love my family so much, and I know they know it. And I don't ever want them to feel like I don't care enough about them to let them know when I've just messed up. You know?
Yeah, I feel that. My mom was much the same way. I never heard an apology ever. And it was about a year ago, actually, and she was upset with me again about something and called to tell me about it. And I think I just shut down. I was stopped talking. And she says, "What do you want from me?" she asks me. And I said, I think I would love to hear I'm sorry for the first time. I'm 51 years old. And I asked my mom if she would say she was sorry for something. And she kind of flippantly said, "I'm sorry." And I knew she didn't really mean it. But just hearing the words, as they weren't even heartfelt, just hearing the words, I sobbed. I broke down and cried. And I think I didn't even realize until that moment how hurtful it is to be a child growing up with never hearing those words, that even hearing just the words come out, even though there was no meaning behind them, impacted me so significantly that I was actually shocked by it, because I've done a lot of work on my mom issues. And I couldn't believe that I sat there sobbing for half an hour.
Well, it provided something to you, obviously, in that moment.
I guess some kind of healing. I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. We hold.
So yes, apologize more. Things.
Yeah.
I agree.
Wow. Good.
I just come home every day and say, "I'm sorry. I don't even know what I did."
Yeah. Wait,
certainly.
As soon as I walk in the door, I just start saying, "I'm sorry." Yeah. I don't even know why.
You know, I have several clients like this, but what's really sad to me is when we're in sessions and we do something called processing a regrettable incident. And it's a powerful exercise that I do with clients all the time, where we go through a regrettable incident that happened, and we figure out how it happened, what set us up for this. Usually it's, you know, someone got flooded, and why did they get flooded, and what were the triggers that were involved and setting that up. And then how can we take responsibility and own it and apologize and then figure out a way to have it not happen again? That's kind of the process. But it's so sad when I'm in sessions and people are bringing up stuff from 20 years ago, 15 years ago, like all this time they've been holding on to these resentments. Yeah. These resentments have just been piling and piling and piling. Yeah. They're just the size of a mountain because they've never apologized. They've never processed them. They've never.
Unspoken stuff too, right?
Yes.
That they've just held on to. And talk about a festering disease,
poison.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the right word for it.
Yeah. Who says that? Holding a grudge is like taking poison and hoping the other person dies.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, because the only person you're hurting is you.
It's the act of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. It's not for the other person, it's for you.
Right.
What it does for you, when you forgive someone else, it heals you from holding on to these emotions. Yeah.
I was just thinking back to what Jared said about values and conflict, because we're talking about conflict in general. So quick story. Every time it snowed, Charla and I would get in a disagreement about our 15-year-old, who was a 14-year-old. I wanted to know why he wasn't shoveling the walk. Like, it's not that hard. Just out the front door and go. And we'd have this just ongoing disagreement. And it took a while for us to, you know, get around to processing this disagreement. And so now what we've come to learn is that disagreements, you know, when we're both butting heads, if you guys can see my fists here, right? Mm-hmm. Held within each of our hands is this deeply held core value, right? So I actually find that disagreements are really more a values mismatch or a values disagreement where we don't understand the problem. So we are, you know, and as we processed this event and we looked at it, and like, I was raised with very authoritarian, strict, hard work, you know, I was the young man of the house. I didn't have a dad, so I shoveled the walk, right? So it was important to me. I wanted to teach my son the value of hard work. I wanted to teach him take care of the house. I wanted him to, you know, show respect and just all these pieces. Those are the things that were important to me. This was held into my fist, and Charlotte's fist was.
Well, and then my side was, well, does he really have to, you know, that it's so cold out there. His poor little fingers are getting numb. And like, does he have to really go out and do this at 6 a.m? And so I wanted it to just be a little bit, I wanted him to be safe. I wanted him to have the right tools. I wanted to make sure that he was warm, and that he was, and that he was a little bit fun, and that we were appreciative of him when he did the stuff, when he did the work, that we built him up and that we told him we were proud of him and made sure that he knew those things. So within each of our conflict, our hands, if our hands each held our values, we're punching at each other's hands, right? But if we open up our fists and look at what's inside, okay, Robert just really wants him to learn how to be a good dad someday. He really just wants him to be a good provider and to learn the hard work and to learn the value of taking care of a family, because he's going to need to do that as a man. Okay, if I can respect that and appreciate that, and he can look into my fist and see that I just want to love on him for doing the things that he does and show him a little bit more gentleness and a little bit more appreciation. Can't we find a solution that does all of that? Why do we need to argue about what time of day the shovel hits the sidewalk? Like, we can actually just find a way to create a win-win. Jared, you said earlier, we just try to, when we get flooded, we just try to push our way through and win. But if we really learn the values that are in the fist, there's almost always a win-win. There's always a way that we can, almost always a way, not maybe not always, but there's usually a way that we can find a solution that honors both parties' values and make sure that we both feel represented in the solution, even if it's a temporary solution.
So instead of Charlotte, instead of Charlotte saying like, move to Florida. Instead of Charlotte saying you're a complete bonehead for making our son shovel the walk, she like understands my perspective behind it, my deeply held value. And instead of me saying she's too soft on him, I say, okay, well, yeah, I can understand that you're worried about him. I'll get him some more gloves and he can go out at 6 in the morning. But
put on long underwear first, son.
Yeah, put on some long, be safe, buddy. Wear some underwear, let's go. But right now, all of a sudden, it's not as much a disagreement. But I mean, that was a longstanding disagreement, a couple of years before we're like, hey, let's dig into this and figure this out, right? And can we do that with those 69% of problems that are going to be perpetual? Can we come to the equation a little bit deeper and say, look, this thing keeps coming up. Like, let's do this. It snows. Mm-hmm. Now we laugh. It snows. We're like, okay. She's like, when do you want? I'm like, I don't care. Let him shovel whenever he wants. Like, because as long as he's going to shovel. And now he just does it on his own without me asking him.
Because he got lots of appreciation.
Yeah. I don't know that that's really the answer, but that's okay.
She has a goodie bag in the closet with a bunch of things that he wants and that she holds for special occasions.
Hides a new pair of Jordans behind there you go. The shovel.
That's not that bad.
It's not that bad.
She takes it out and sets it out on the sidewalk so that when it get, she's like, okay, this is your goal. Get to the shoes.
The shoes. Bottom of the sidewalk.
Dig to the Jordans. That's great.
Yeah. That's the key point is nobody wants to be in a relationship where one person is always winning at the expense of the other. We want to be in a relationship where we accept influence from one another, where he's willing to be influenced by me. I'm willing to be influenced by him. We're willing to maybe shift our perspective a little bit when we hear each other's what's important, our values, and then come up with a solution where we both feel represented. That's the kind of relationship we want.
Yeah. I think something that my wife and I have been doing recently as well is respecting and honoring the strengths of the other person. Mm. And so like I'm terrible when it comes to in the moment.
Spelling. Oh.
And spelling. Yes. Spelling. Spelling and grammar are not my strong suit. But when it comes to you have your fight, flight, or freeze, you know, responses. I'm a freezer, not because I want to be, just because my brain shuts off and quits working. Christiana is like, she jumps right in and like can fix any problem. You know, the best example is a kid knocks something over, you know, and I'm like, oh man, what do I do with this? And that would frustrate her. She's like, get something to help clean up this. Why are you just standing there? But for us to recognize, hey, in those moments, I need to step back and Christiana, you need to take charge because you operate well in that moment. And we recognize that I'm weak in that area and you're strong in that area. So let's, instead of fighting over it, let's have a plan so that when these things happen, we know what role we're going to play. Mm-hmm. Vice versa, you know, if there's something that's going on that I'm a strength in, where that's part of learning each other, right? And learning how to handle those problems as a couple and really recognizing. And so I love it with your guys' example where you both have strong values of what you are trying to give to your son, right? Whether that's compassion or work ethic or whatever it might be, but then figuring out, you know, those solutions together. I just think it's a beautiful example. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys so much for sharing that because it makes sense because it's not a right or wrong. It's a let's figure it out together.
I love that. I love what you said. Yeah. And I think what I love most about the strengths idea that you just brought up is how it allows us to appreciate one another's strengths. I think one of the greatest things we could do and maybe take this one piece away from this whole show is how can I look to my partner and to our relationship every single day and be grateful and to acknowledge and to appreciate at least two things in each other every single day? Because couples who do that and we call it positive sentiment override. It starts to snowball. They start to see more good, more good, more good. Mm-hmm. The couples that don't do that, they just hone in on and only see the negative. You'll find whatever you're seeking. You'll find that idiosyncrasies and all the things your partner does wrong. But if you look for what's going right, mm-hmm. you're going to be so much happier. I mean, 94-95% of couples who just appreciate each other basically have a happy future.
I just heard a story yesterday about a guy who was, I don't know if he was getting therapy or what it was going on, but basically he said, the therapist said to his client, he said, okay, I want you to look around the room for 10 seconds and I want you to find everything in the room that's brown. Mm-hmm. And so the guy's looking around. And 10 seconds, he's like, okay, close your eyes. He said, okay, now what in the room is red? And he couldn't come up with anything, right? And even some of the things that he thought were brown weren't actually brown.
Exactly.
And so it's just, it's exactly that. What you're looking for and what you're seeking after, that's what you'll find. And you'll even turn things that aren't that into that thing that you're looking for.
100%. It's so interesting when a couple is in negative sentiment override and they're looking at everything through that negative lens, they'll even tell you the story of how they met and it will be completely different from reality because they've gone back and it's that thing that wasn't even brown. Like they've just put a negative story on everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, the support we get from our spouse, right? When they tell you like, oh, you can do anything. And I'm going to bring it right over to Chris because Chris has been in the batting cage with his boys before, right? You've been in a batting cage with your boys?
Yeah. Just, you know, several thousand times.
Yeah, several hundred thousand times. And, when they're in a little bit of a slump and they finally get a hold of one. Right. And you're like, that was it right there. Dial that in, buddy. You got it. And then it's bam, bam, bam,
bam.
I know you can do this hands forward. You're killing it, dude. Bam, bam, bam. Right. And next thing you know, like you brought the slugger out in him. Right. This is the same thing for our relationship. We go into positive sentiment override and we just start looking for the things that are the best. Like you'll perform better for you, for your partner. Things are like, oh man, you cook spaghetti so well. Charlotte makes this red sauce that is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like it's the best thing I've ever tasted. Who wants to bet? Maybe I get some in the next year.
Well, that's it. It's actually almost like hypnotic language. When you speak to somebody and you say, you treat me so good. You take such good care of me. Like, what do they want to do? They want to give you more of that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now I want to do it better. I'm already getting praise for doing it at the level I'm at, but maybe I could even step it up a notch and wow them even further. You know, it's like, it is, and it's contagious.
And the reverse is true too, right? If they're giving you the negative, it's like you shut down and you have no desire to do any of the things that you know that you should be doing.
That's right. Mm. Destroys the goodwill.
Yeah. And I'd like to close with just talking about just the power of friendship in a marriage and in a relationship. I mean, any relationship that's something that we hold in high regard probably has some level of friendship associated with it, whether it's with coworkers or, people that have been with family members, extended family members, just because you're related doesn't mean you're friends, right? But being in a friendship with your spouse, having these moments together experiencing life and enjoying each other's company as friends, laughing together, smiling together, holding hands together, you know, wanting to be next to each other, watching a movie or a show. These are things that you do with somebody that you love when the sexual part of it isn't there, right? Mm-hmm. Just the power of that, and sometimes that's lost, I think, certainly in the weeds of marriage when you're, you know, raising children and busy working and all of this, and that the friendship can kind of be pushed aside. I'd like to just kind of finish with that. How you guys keep your friendship strong?
Oh, so many good questions. Well, and we already talked about appreciation. That's probably one of the big ones there. You know, the other part is really, we call it love maps, just updating each other on our inner psychological world. Like, what's going on with you today? Like being involved, right?
We're interested.
We're just checking in. Like, you both have friends from high school that you knew in high school that you've not talked to since. And if you get together with them at some event, the only thing you're going to talk about is that game that you guys played together back in high school, because you're not current on the events, right? So in order to be good friends, and you're good friends, by the way, you both know you're good friends, even other than your spouses, right? The good friends that you have, you know what's going on in their life. Like, you know, if somebody's got a sore knee or sore shoulder, right? Or they're working on a project, or maybe they're writing a book or whatever, right? Like, you know these things because you're enmeshed in their life, right? For our partner, the one that we love and we're committed to, our, you know, the one we're married to, the one that we committed ourselves to, my ride or die, as I like to call her, right? Like, I want to know as much about her as I possibly can. And then we're back to rituals, right? We have two rituals. Well, we have more than two, but we have two that are super important to us. It's how we leave and how we come back. It's easy. When I leave, I'm always going to get a kiss or a hug. If I miss it and I pretend that I'm busy, she calls me back. She's like, nope, nope. I want that kiss. And we're going to ask each other what's going on in the day. She's like, what do you got today? Like, well, you know, I got a bunch of these things, got a meeting over here at this building or whatever. I'm like, what do you have? She's like, oh, well, I have I have a couple of clients today at like 12 and 1. Guess what happens when we come home? End of the day. Hey, how'd the clients go? Like, oh, they were great. Let me tell you about them. And we have a little bit of a stress relieving conversation. Make sure to make contact with her when I come home. One of her deeply held core values for how we connect is a ritual for showing her that she's loved. So I'll kiss her on the back of her neck, give her a hug, because that's super important to her. High five that 15-year-old on the way by, because while he's important, he's not as important as this one. Right. I know that sometimes that's counterintuitive to some people in their relationships, but I'm showing him that I love his mom. Right. And I'm not afraid to show affection in front of him because I don't want him to be unaffectionate in his relationships. So that's sort of maintaining those things. There's another one though.
So appreciation, having the rituals, these are ways to have friendship, right? So we have rituals. We have staying current in each other's lives, just being an expert. But to do that, the tricky part with that is actually letting ourselves be seen. Actually fully letting our walls down and being vulnerable. I think vulnerability is the way to intimacy. It does require trust. You can't have trust, vulnerability without trust. You can't have trust without vulnerability, but it is the way to intimacy and it is the way to friendship. So really allowing yourself to be known and knowing each other, really knowing each other. That's the secret, which means you just got to invest the time. You know, yes, life gets busy and it is busy, but we have to carve out a minimum amount of time for each other every week to make sure we're staying current on each other's lives, because our lives are always changing. So friendship is everything. Friendship is the foundation of every single relationship. We said at the very beginning, there's three things. There's friendship, managing conflict, and then creating these values together where we're creating shared meaning. Friendship is the foundation. Like, we have to have friendship. If we just work on conflict, I don't care how great the therapist is. You can go to the best therapist in the world and just work on conflict and not work on friendship. You're not going to have anything. It just creates a void that you have to fill that void back up with positive affect systems, with fun and play and adventure and conversations and intimacy. And that's what friendship is. And by the way, the better your friendship, the better sexual intimacy will be, because it is all based on a foundation of having really great friendship.
I think that's a wonderful sentiment. I couldn't agree more. How it's powerful that is in a relationship. What's that? What's that, Jared?
It's always a solid place to end.
It's always a solid place to end. I love that the notion of friendship in a marriage or in a loving relationship is that, that friendship's at the heart of it. It has to be there, and in a power, and it, there are ways to nurture that and to keep it alive, like as you've both just shared, which is so great. Yeah. What are some of the best ways for our amazing audience and listeners to connect with you both, Robert and Sharla, to seek more of your material, maybe even to work with you?
Yeah. So we put out a lot of free content, tons. So there's every Wednesday, we drop a weekly podcast episode that's free, and we don't gatekeep. Like the stuff we're teaching on the podcast is the same stuff you get when you pay to come to a retreat or you work with us in person. That's Master Your Marriage podcast. And then on Instagram, we're dropping daily tips every single day, really super high value type of content over on Instagram. So those are the two best ways. And then of course, in our, on our, you know, link in our bio there on our social media, you can always connect with us if you want to talk about doing something one-on-one.
Wonderful. Well, this has been really a joy. I know I've learned a lot. I tried to remain as quiet as I could throughout to absorb all of the wonderful things you had to share. So helpful for me. So thank you for just what it's done for me, and I know our listeners on the other end have benefited just immensely from this. Jared, do you have any parting words for us, my friend?
No, thank you guys so much. This has been great.
Thank you for having
us. I'm going
to
come over there and give you a big hug in your office, if that's okay with you, my friend.
I'll allow it.
Friendship.
Well, thank you all so much for tuning into the Strong by Design podcast. Another wonderful episode, as I promised. Hopefully, you can share some of this with your spouse or have them listen to the whole episode. That would be wonderful. Listen together even. And we hope that you can certainly master your marriage. God bless you. We'll be back next week, as always, with another episode here on Strong by Design. Talk with you then.
Thank you so much for listening to the Strong by Design podcast. If you found value in today's episode, please subscribe so that more people can find out about our show. Plus, you don't want to miss any future episodes with the amazing guests and topics we have lined up for you.